we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's begin with boxing. World heavyweight champion Anthony Joshua will defend his WBA, WBO, and IBF titles against Alexander Povetkin of Russia in London on September 22nd. Joshua's promoter, Eddie Hearn, says the fight will take place at Wembley Stadium, where AJ defeated former world champion Vladimir Klitschko in April 2017. Since then, Joshua has fought twice at Principality Stadium in Cardiff, Wales, where he beat Carlos Takam and Joseph Parker. The 28-year-old Joshua has won all 21 of his prize fights, 20 of them by knockout. The challenger, Povetkin, is 38 years old, with a professional record of 34 victories and one defeat, with 24 knockouts. Povetkin's only loss came in 2013, when he lost a unanimous decision to the now-retired Vladimir Klitschko. In a statement, Anthony Joshua said, and I quote, "Povetkin is a serious challenge that I will prepare meticulously for. He has serious pedigree, and only a fool would underestimate what he brings to the table." And what about WBC champion Deontay Wilder? Will he eventually fight Anthony Joshua? Well, negotiations between Wilder and Joshua reportedly have stalled for now, but April 2019 has been mentioned as a possible date down the road. And I'll be talking Joshua Povetkin, Joshua Wilder, and other recent boxing developments later this week with Namdi Hollywood Moueta, our undisputed and still reigning prince of pugilistics. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. South Africa has produced some world-class athletes over the years, and one of them is 29-year-old Karina Horn. In early May, at an IAAF Diamond League meet in Doha, Qatar, Karina became the first South African woman to break 11 seconds over 100 meters. Karina clocked 10.98 seconds in Doha, lowering her own South African national record. Karina participated in a variety of sports before turning to athletics, and she talked about her background and other topics with the energetic Andy Edwards at the recent Athletics World Cup in London. Here's Andy.
The South African team captain at the Athletics World Cup is Karina Horn, and she's having her best season. First South African woman, to break 11 seconds in 100 metres, 10.98 this season. So she's very much informed. But it'll be good to hear more about Karina's career and how she's come to this point. Well, firstly, let's deal with this season. Did you have the sense coming into, well, what I might call the global, the European outdoor season? Of course, South Africa has its domestic season earlier, that you were in line for something special in terms of your performances?
Thanks for having me. And yes, definitely this coming into the season, I already had indoors and I broke the South African record there twice over 2 days. And then I knew, okay, if I can carry on my training, keep it up like that, I know something's going to happen in 100 meters, what I've been waiting for. And we had nationals earlier this year, a week after indoors, and I broke the SA record there as well. And yeah, so I thought, okay, if I get my training back to the 100 meters and focus on that, I think there will be something coming.
That kind of dual peaking, the domestic South African season and then the world track and field season, that's something that all top South African athletes have to deal with. But is it tricky? Because, okay, you've got your domestic competition, but then you come to what I might say is the really big scene, everybody knows, even though this year it's not a global championship, but then there's nothing tougher than coming out to Europe.
Yeah, true. It's very tricky because even sometimes, like some of the athletes, we are doing the indoors as well. So it's difficult to prepare because you have indoors and then like a week later you have to run nationals. And for instance, for me, it's two different, it's 60 meters, 100 meters. It's a total different technique that I use and preparation for the race. So yeah, and I don't really prepare for the South African season. I normally only run nationals, and the nationals I just run out of training, so it's not something I prepare for. And that's why when I ran this nationals this year, and I already ran that time without preparing for the 100 meters, I knew okay, something's about to happen.
Can you say a little bit more about, you say that the difference in technique running 60 meters, which is almost always indoors, and the 100, which is outdoors? I mean, for non-sprint specialists, I mean, people say, well, 40 meters longer, that's all. But you tell us the background.
Yeah, the difference is, well, obviously, there's less time to make any mistakes. In 100 meters, if you still have a bit time, but 60 meters, if the gun goes, it's actually gone. When you look up, it's gone. The difference is when you have your acceleration part, and when you get to the finish line, you don't have the last 40 meters to get your stride length in where the actual race is taking part. So maybe it's just like, yeah, in the 60 meters, you just lean forward and just run to the line and it's done. And 100 meters, you still have time to think and to focus and to do something better.
You've achieved a landmark this season with the 10.98, the first to break 11 seconds among South African sprinters. What do you think your potential could be, not just this season, but of course next year, it's a World Championship year, and then of course 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games?
Yeah, I definitely take it a step at a time, but I do have future goals, and it's definitely faster than that. Next year, I really want a medal at the World Champs. So you have to run faster than 11.9. That's the goal for next year. And yeah, Tokyo 2020, also definitely medals. And yeah, hopefully I can be top five fastest women ever that produced 100 meter time.
Have you always been a sprinter? Just thinking back to at school and University of Pretoria, I mean, did you do all sorts of sports and then found your niche in sprinting?
Actually, athletics wasn't my priority in school. I was more into cricket, and actually I played for the first team tennis. I was the captain there for the first team of tennis, and the adventure race, hockey was my main sport. And yeah, at my last year of school, I got injured with hockey because I was that fast. I always put three or four players on me, and then they hit me on the knee, so I was like, I couldn't play anymore, so I was injured. And then my mom just said to me, okay, that's it, you have to decide what you want to do. And then I just, yeah, decided athletics, everything depends on me. It's not on a team. So whatever I put in, I get out. And I think that motivated me because everything's on me. So I can take the responsibility. I know if I put in the work, I will get something out.
I think that's something I certainly heard before from other elite track and field performers. There's the kind of, it's all down to me. I mean, of course, there's a support team, but it's different to team sports. But just going back to those other sports you did when you were a girl, do you think that helped you? Because sometimes I think people specialise too early, but having that all-round, I don't know, outdoor physical coordination is a help when you come to specialise.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, even if you're going into pro in athletics as well, you need something to take your mind off to. So even if you just go play fun hockey or fun basketball or anything just to take your mind off, that's really good and really necessary if you're into the athletics. It makes a big difference. And yeah, just to have the perspective from a young age, it also helps when you come into this section where you have met with people, because when you travel alone. Yeah, so you come to a hotel or to a meeting where there's people you've never seen before, people you don't really know. So sometimes you have to communicate, and in team sports like that as well, you learn that from a young age, and that helps when you come to meetings like this.
Well, that's fascinating stuff. Well, Karina, thanks for that insight into your history, and all the best for the future. It's already been a fine season for you, and let's hope you continue to break those records for South Africa and get those medals. Thank you, Karina Horn.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, energetic Andy Edwards, for that interview with Karina Horn, South Africa's national record holder in the women's 100 meters. And Karina spoke with Andy at the Athletics World Cup in London. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The Nigeria Football Federation is embroiled in a leadership crisis. FIFA President Gianni Infantino said last week in Russia that World Football's governing body recognizes Amaju Pinnick as head of the NFF. However, Nigeria's sports minister Solomon Dolung says he recognizes Chris Giwa as the federation's president. Already, the League Management Company of Nigeria has suspended indefinitely the resumption of the professional league in the country, scheduled to resume on July 21st because of the crisis. Anochi Anibueze is a former group sports editor of the Vanguard newspaper in Lagos, Nigeria. He's presently the Saturday editor of the paper. In a conversation with Iron Mike Mbonye, Anochi said he supports the statement by FIFA President Gianni Infantino backing Amaju Pinnick.
Well, I think it was the right pronouncement. Amaju Pinnick is the president, and whatever happens, he's still the president of Nigeria Football Federation, in spite of the politics they're playing, which I think does not augur well for Nigerian football. Infantino was right.
On the other hand, Nigerian Minister of Sports, Mr. Solomon Dalong, said, despite Infantino's pronouncement, that he recognizes the person who has taken over the seat of the Nigerian Football President's office. What's also your reaction to this?
Well, I don't think he was well advised. The FIFA rules are clear. FIFA rules and regulations are clear. The minister made that pronouncement following a court order. Now, FIFA frowns at taking football matters to conventional courts. I think it's in their statute, section 59, 1 and 2, states clearly that football matters should not be taken to conventional courts. And Nigeria, Chris Giwa took the case to court, and even the Court of Arbitration, he went also to Court of Arbitration, where he failed. So I think the whole thing was wrong for Chris Giwa to go to court. And then FIFA is now frowning at it. I'm very, very disappointed because Amaju won that election. Before then, Chris Giwa had also staged an election in Abuja. The sports minister of Nigeria, Dan Long, has been playing the script of Chris Giwa. And everybody knows that. Why he's doing that, I don't know. And this is part of why FIFA came out with such rules. They want stability in football. And especially in Africa, each government that came in appointed or dissolved the existing football federation or football association, as the case might be. So FIFA wanted to stop all this, to give football the space, the room to operate professionally. And that was why they came out with that rule. And now Nigeria is flouting it. I think FIFA ban is imminent.
Already, the League Management Company of Nigeria, the body that organizes Nigeria's Professional Football League, announced an indefinite suspension of the Nigerian Football League. How do you see these consequences on the Nigerian football?
It means closing a sector of the economy. Football has employed so many people, so many youths. So it means killing a sector, which is very, very wrong. People earn living from playing football. And don't forget the international dimension. Our players may not have chance to go abroad again to earn a living and earn foreign exchange. Totally, the business there will be destroyed. And then it's not good for our football.
And what if the FIFA ban comes on Nigeria, FIFA bans Nigeria, what will be the consequences?
One, our players may not be able to go abroad. There will be no international transfers. Two, our league will not mean anything. Already have already suspended the league. Our league will not mean anything because whoever wins will not go anywhere. Our referees will not officiate in any international competition. Our players will be grounded here. It's a lot. It's huge. The consequences are huge. And then I wonder why we will be playing this game at this moment, that the economy is bad and everybody is pulling resources together to make sure we come out of recession. It's a big damage to Nigerian football. And I think the minister has not done well. And this is exactly why FIFA is frowning against taking football matters to conventional courts, because of politicization of football, and FIFA is against it.
The crisis that is rocking the Football Federation in Nigeria appears to be a recurring event. Nigeria came back from the last World Cup from Brazil. There was a similar crisis. As the World Cup ended in South Africa, there was also a similar problem. Which way out? How can Nigeria avoid this kind of crisis at the end of every World Cup?
It's left for government to appoint people who are knowledgeable in the management of sports to run our sports. That's the only way. Otherwise, we'll continue to have crisis.
That's Anochi Anibueze, the former group sports editor of Nigeria's Vanguard newspaper. And Anochi spoke with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Still with African football, some top players are moving to new European clubs next season. And joining us now with an update is reporter Prince Nesta. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sunny. Well, clubs were quietly strengthening their squads during the World Cup, top on the list being Manchester City, who completed the signing of 27-year-old Algerian attacking midfielder Riyad Mahrez from Leicester City for a reported fee of around £60 million. Liverpool also signed Guinean midfielder Naby Keita from RB Leipzig for a reported fee of £52 million. Keita has actually been identified as a worthy successor to ex-Liverpool midfielder Steven Gerrard. So far, Cristiano Ronaldo's move to Juventus for a reported fee of around £99.2 million still remains the most expensive deal after his 9-year stint at Real Madrid. Ronaldo said that he was grateful for the opportunity given to him by Juventus, as players of his age actually usually go to Qatar or China. Well, in other news, Manchester United has also recruited Brazilian midfielder Fred from Shakhtar Donetsk for a reported fee of about £52 million, and also paid Porto £19 million for defender Diogo Dalot. Chelsea have also completed the signing of midfielder Jorginho from Napoli for £60 million, while Swiss midfielder Jadon Shaqiri has joined Liverpool from Stoke City. Arsenal have also signed midfielder Lucas Torreira, keeper Bernd Leno, defender Socrates, and Stefan Lichtsteiner. And it's reported that these particular players will actually be helping Arsenal, which has taken a long time to win the English Premier League, and they will really strengthen the squad this time around. That's it for now, Sonny. I will keep you updated in case of any new development.
Thanks, Prince. What about Mahrez going to Man City? It seems like Man City getting even stronger with the acquisition of Mahrez.
Oh, yeah, and that's a very big acquisition, actually, considering the fact that it took a long time for them to get Mahrez. Leicester City have been holding on to this particular player, and he has really been a great player for Leicester City, considering the fact that he actually helped them win their first English Premier League. And he will be an incredible boost for Manchester City, which already has a great squad. But I see them actually retaining this particular Premier League. Or if they don't retain it, then they're going to be one of the big favourites, considering the fact that Algerian midfielder Mahrez has joined the squad.
Thanks, Prince. Reporter Prince Nesta. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. There's a big sporting event taking place here in Washington, and joining us now to tell us about it is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In the words of this tweet by the Washington Post, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is returning to Washington for the first time since 1969. Washington, D.C. will play host to the All-Star Game later Tuesday evening at Nationals Park, which is about a stone's throw from our VOA headquarters. This year marks the 89th All-Star Game, with the city of Washington playing host for a fifth time. And the stage is set. National League manager Dave Roberts announced Monday that Max Scherzer will be his starting pitcher for the National League.
To give the ball to Max, it's an honor for me to watch him do his thing, and there's a lot of great candidates, but for me, I think that I've always tried to make things bigger than me and the club, and I think that Max, for the game of baseball, for our country, and he's the right guy to take the baseball.
Following the announcement, Max told reporters, starting in the All-Star Game in his ballpark is a dream come true.
So many emotions when you know that you're pitching in your home park. This is such an honor for the All-Star Game to be here. And in the previous experiences of being in the All-Star Games, you know, seeing the hometown players and how the fans get behind the hometown players, it's always been a special moment just watching that from afar and being on the other side. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like to have the Nats fans here supporting all of us. So it's just an unbelievable honor that to be able to have that recognition, to be able to go out there and start this thing again, because this is just a dream come true.
On the American League side, manager A.J. Hinch announced that Chris Sale of the Boston Red Sox will be the starting pitcher for the American League.
There are a number of guys that I considered, but honestly, the proof is in the numbers and the most consistent starter in the American League. You like wins, you like innings, you like consecutive six-inning outings. Do you like
punch outs.
Pure dominance? You like the punch? We've seen a few of those. He is truly a special pitcher in our league. He's truly someone that deserves this honor.
Sale now becomes the third pitcher in history to start in three consecutive All-Star games. The All-Star game features the brightest stars from across the major leagues, and compiling the roster is a bit of a group effort. The starters who will take the field were voted on by baseball fans. Pitchers were selected by the managers. Managers and players select the reserves. Among the fan favorites in the starting lineup, local hero Bryce Harper, who just claimed his first career home run derby title, will represent the Washington Nationals in center field. Major League Baseball has billed the event as the, quote, largest interactive baseball theme park in the world. The All-Stars gather at Nationals Park on Tuesday. And that is all from me. Throwing it back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. And yes, that was a very nice throw. I even caught it. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In cycling, local favorite Julian Alaphilippe won Tuesday's 10th stage of the Tour de France. A 158.5-kilometer high mountain ride from Annecy to Le Grand Bornand. During the third and final ascent, the Frenchman Alaphilippe accelerated near the summit, overtaking the Belgian Yael Vanendert in the last 100 meters of the race and dropping him. It was the biggest victory of his career for the 26-year-old Alaphilippe, whose younger brother, 22-year-old Brian, is also a professional cyclist. Another Belgian, Greg Van Avermaet, finished fourth to retain the overall leader's yellow jersey. Van Avermaet is 43 seconds ahead of British rider Geraint Thomas. And that wraps up the July 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to producer Kwame Ofori. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On July 9th, Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki and Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed determined to resolve the differences between their countries by signing a peace accord that will end two decades of hostilities. For 5 years after Eritrea achieved its independence from Ethiopia by referendum in 1993, the two countries enjoyed cordial relations. But a 1998 dispute over border issues escalated into a vicious war that cost over 80,000 lives. The hostilities ceased in 2000, but the two countries maintained a military stalemate over the disputed territory. Aside from an end to the long-running hostilities, a peace agreement would result in significant benefits for both countries. Ethiopia is a landlocked country, but good relations with Eritrea would afford it access to Assab and Massawa, ports on the Red Sea, one of the world's busiest shipping routes from Asia to Europe via the Suez Canal. Eritrea, on the other hand, would have the opportunity to improve its economy, which had been severely damaged by the war with Ethiopia and hamstrung by the subsequent stalemate. The country is isolated, and many Eritreans have emigrated. The United States welcomes the July 9th commitment to peace and security between the State of Eritrea and the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia, effectively ending 20 years of conflict, said U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in a written statement. We commend Prime Minister Abiy of Ethiopia and President Isaias of Eritrea for courageously leading their citizens toward peace, prosperity, and political reform. The normalization of relations and the adoption of the Joint Declaration of Peace and Friendship between Eritrea and Ethiopia will provide their peoples with the opportunity to focus on shared aspirations for closer political, economic, and social ties, said Secretary Pompeo. The United States stands ready to support this process and encourages all parties to continue working with transparency and confidence in the coming days. Peace between Ethiopia and Eritrea will further the cause of stability, security, and development in the Horn of Africa and Red Sea.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the upset-filled 2018 FIFA World Cup wraps up on Sunday. All five of the teams from Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, Senegal, Morocco and Tunisia were knocked out in the preliminary rounds. A discussion on the World Cup on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information. Looking for something? Headline news? Interviews? Analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.